I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Laura Jack, author of the number one best-selling book, The Compassionate Code, How to Say the Right Thing When the Wrong Thing Happens, teaches compassionate communication and how we can relate to one another more effectively during the challenging moments in life. Her message is to cultivate a culture of compassion, starting with self, and to create a better understanding of loss and the accompanying grief. Laura is a trainer for the Grief Recovery Institute and Mastery Level Transformation Life Coach. Using practices of self-care and self-love, she helps people recover their light after loss. Laura's mission is to cultivate a culture of compassion, starting with self, and to create a better understanding about loss and the accompanying grief. When she's not trying to build a more compassionate world, you can find her playing with her friends and family, hiking around Hood River, or planning her next trip. More information is available at www.laurajack.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Laura, and I look forward to hearing about compassion. Now first, how do you define compassion?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So the way that I define compassion is relating kindly and with loving kindness toward others in their times of need, particularly when they're going through challenging times. And so having compassion for others is about relating kindly with loving kindness to other people.
And what is the difference between compassion, empathy, and sympathy?
So this is probably one of the most important aspects of what I teach because it's one of the things that confuses people the most. So compassion, I like to think of it as a bell curve where compassion is at the top of the bell curve. And just to the right of compassion is empathy. Empathy is about feeling with someone. So it's for people who really feel deeply with someone. So say you watch movies or you watch the news or you have a friend who tells you something that's going on with them and you feel with them. You feel their feelings. You feel sadness. You feel pain. Sympathy is on the other side of compassion on this bell curve where it's really more about feeling for someone. So it's a little bit more disassociated from that person's experience, but it's having, you know, feelings of wanting to help them or feeling sad for them. And so compassion is the balance between sympathy, feeling for someone, and empathy, feeling with someone. And, you know, for me going back, it's just that experiencing feelings of loving kindness towards another person's affliction. So, yeah, that's, and I think most importantly, it's just this idea that we can care about somebody without getting overly wrapped up in right. what they're going through, you know, right. feeling so deeply with them that we end up burning ourselves out or that we feel so disassociated from them that we end up being disconnected or feeling pity for them.
Mm-hmm. And Laura, how can you show compassion for others?
So I think it's about presence. Showing compassion is about being available, I think. This is my opinion, but from all the research I've done and all the work I've done in grief, I think it's about understanding other people's stories, giving people the benefit of the doubt, acknowledging their hardship, but again, without falling into the depths of despair with them, because we can't really help them when we're down in the, you know, in the depths of darkness with them. But being compassionate towards someone, or what it looks like, or feels like, or seems like, is, you know, relating with them, acknowledging mm-hmm. what they're going through, giving them the benefit of the doubt that, you know, maybe what they're going through, we can't really understand because maybe we don't know what their story is. And so a lot of what I love about the work I do is understanding that compassion is about understanding that there's a story behind everyone. Behind every face you see, behind every action that people take, there's a story that's worth understanding.
And can compassion be learned or is it an emotion?
I absolutely believe it can be learned. I think that compassion is about learning, and it's about constantly understanding and improving with awareness. So that part of why I wrote the book, The Compassion Code, was because I wanted people to understand that compassion is like a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that can be worked and grown and improved and gotten stronger. Because when we think, oh, you know, I'm not compassionate, that there's like some hopelessness there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're
mm-hmm.
thinking, oh man, every experience I have in my life helps me grow my compassion, helps me improve my compassion, then it's a little bit more reasonable. It's a little bit more accessible. And, you know, like any learned skill, compassion is just takes practice and awareness. And one of the funniest things about compassion and the idea that we can learn compassion is that it takes self-compassion to learn compassion. We have to actually be kind to ourselves when we don't do it right. You know, when we don't do it, quote unquote, right, we have to be kind to ourselves, knowing that, well, I'm going to do better next time.
And there's a series of studies that shows that people who are wealthy are less compassionate than those who have less money. Why do you think that is so? I mean, I know there's always exceptions, but that was the conclusions of the studies that I saw, that the wealthy were not as compassionate.
That's a very interesting question and perspective, because one, I haven't seen that. And two, so like sometimes we can sometimes feel sympathetic, and that isn't compassion. You know, it's a little bit more disconnected. So perhaps with that kind of frame of reference, it could be that when you have more money, maybe part of, and again, this is just my opinion mm-hmm. Like my insight, but maybe part of it is that we have disconnected ourselves, or maybe we'd rather put money towards the problem than actually help with the problem. And sometimes with that idea of putting money towards something, or, you know, not to say that donations aren't wonderful, because they are, but maybe that's a bit more of a disconnected way or disassociated way to help others. So perhaps it isn't that people with money aren't kind or generous. It may just be that the way that they give is a bit more disassociated. Maybe they've disconnected themselves from a different part of society where they don't really relate to other people's affliction.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, when it comes to the things that bring us compassion, it doesn't have to be hardship in the traditional sense. It could be loss of any kind. So, and people with money or without money, you know, as we've seen in these recent events with the hurricanes,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, nobody gets to decide who is affected by such terrible tragedies or such huge loss. You know, it affects us because we're all human. And so in that sense, I feel like, you know, those are the kinds of experience bring us compassion for others. And so I'd be curious to see related to the way that we see compassion, I think that those are the kinds of experience compassion. And nobody's immune to those, just like nobody is immune to grief.
Mm-hmm. Then compassion, what are some things that people can do to develop compassion?
So one of them is to read my book. No, I partially am joking and I'm partially serious, partially because I put so much time and energy into helping people grow their compassion. And so that's what the book is all about, is how do we have compassion for different people, including ourselves, strangers, family and friends, people who consistently infuriate you, you know, people who are in crisis or people who are grieving. And then also people like us who are caregivers, people who work in the realm of caring for others. And so how do we do that? I mean, there's so many different ways, but I think one of the biggest things is really, again, going back to presence, letting go of this judgmental mindset and letting go and bringing more curiosity. So one of my coaching mentors has this expression. She said, the cure to judgment is curiosity. And one of the things I love about that is it's hard to be judgmental towards others when we're curious
mm-hmm.
about others.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so one of the ways to grow our compassion is to grow our curiosity and wonder, you know, I love the idea that we take this step back and we say, I wonder what's going on with this person, rather than, gosh, this person is such a jerk, or gosh, this person's being so rude. Instead of having that quick judgment of what they're doing wrong, it's taking that quick step back, saying, I wonder what this person might be going through.
Mm-hmm.
And even just that simple shift in from judgment to curiosity can actually improve our compassion.
Mm-hmm. I think that people that are curious tend to be more broad-minded and also tend, because they wouldn't be exploring things because of their curiosity, unless they were broad-minded. And I think that they also tend to be more open about controversial issues in society. I don't know if you feel the same or not, but...
Even when it comes to the individual, you know, learning about other people, you know, in my book, I talk about how getting curious, even about other religions or other cultures, other languages, is a huge opportunity for us to be more compassionate. And some of my earliest experiences of improving my compassion were going on foreign exchange in high school. I went on foreign exchange to Costa Rica when I was 16. And that gave me so much more awareness about how other people do things,
mm-hmm.
and helped me recognize that the way that we do it isn't the only way. And it's actually not even the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it gave me this huge new appreciation that the world is not just my frame of reference. There's so many other ways to see the world. And I think that was such a huge experience for me with going on foreign exchange and then having and hosting exchange students in our home as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it gave us these insights and awarenesses into how other people do things, and it no longer becomes scary. I don't know about you, but when you're a kid and you don't know things, you know, you have to just go based on what your parents say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so for me, when my parents exposed me to all these other people who do things in a totally different way than we did, it just gave me a tremendous amount of appreciation, understanding, interest, love, and compassion for the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think absolutely, I think it can be eye-opening. And then also, you know, part of why I love the work around passion is because I think it helps us build bridges between people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you and I were talking before we got on our call today, it was, you know, the world around us, there's so much pain. And if we could have more understanding of each other, then it would help bring us closer together.
Right, right. And it almost seems like faith is a part of this also. It seems like most of the, what I call them, spiritual attributes, someone told me that they really aren't, but for me, that is a nice way to categorize them all. The faith is almost a part of this too, because you mentioned being afraid and then you get to see other people and how they interact and all. But faith is the opposite of fear. So, if you are fearful and you want to overcome that, and then you can practice faith, because that's the opposite, is it not? So
I think for me, the opposite of fear is love and trust. And I think that faith can be, depending on the person, inclusive of love and trust.
Right, right.
Because some people don't have, I think a lot of people associate faith with religion, which I don't necessarily, that may or may not be helpful for people. But I think that for me, trust in others, trust in myself, trust in the world, trust in, you know, and a lot of people lose that trust or that faith, right? But I think that having love and having trust are the opposite of fear. Because when we love and we trust, it's a lot harder to be afraid.
And to me, again, based on my past, faith is it incorporates trust.
Mm-hmm.
It incorporates love, a different type of love than most people think of when they think of love. They think of the sexual love and not the spiritual type of love.
You know, it's really funny because on my signature in my email. It says light and love.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, who is very different from me, he's, obviously we grew up with similar values and whatnot, but he wrote me one time and said, you know, it bothers me that you sign your email light and love. And I said, what is it about that? You know, what is it about light and love that bothers you? And he said, because he felt like it watered down the love that I have for family and friends, you know, close people in my life, to say that to other people. And so interestingly that you say that, you know, faith or love can be considered romantic love, but there's so many different ways to view love.
Right.
You know, and for me, the way that I see love is this love of common humanity,
right?
This love, when I say light and love, or when I say sending love, I'm not saying I'm sending romantic love or I love you in that way, but it's that idea of loving humans or loving other people, because I have compassion for what you're going through, what you've been through, or who you are. And I think so it's interesting because I feel like that really opened my eyes to this idea that, you know, when I say light and love, mm-hmm. how could that be offensive? But it actually, you know, can be. It's like even something like that can be confusing for somebody, right? And so I was glad you brought it up because, again, going back to the idea of curiosity, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, how curious that for him was misinterpreted as offensive.
I think that a lot of it has to do with your consciousness, if that makes sense. And people who are... And I don't like to say higher or lower or better or worse and all that because they're all judgmental concepts. But what I mean is that people who are at a little higher level of consciousness tend to think of love as universal love for mankind. And that people who are lower on that continuum may not have had the same experiences, and so they don't see love in the same way. They see it more as a person-to-person, like male, female, husband, wife, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally can relate to that. And I think I've even shifted. I was an I love you person all my life, even when I was in early, you know, middle school, kind of. Mm-hmm. I always told all my friends I love them. Mm-hmm. I've always been very generous with my love and my use of the word love. But I think that as I've also grown up and gotten more into these different realms of understanding and more education about like personal growth, and I do believe that, yeah, your idea of love develops into this idea for love, universal love that you mentioned. I like that term, universal love, love for humankind, love for others, even who we don't know. And I think that's what compassion is also about.
Right, right, right. And I think a lot of the spiritual concepts are basically about that, because think there's something in the Bible that says, it's talking about different attributes, but and it says love is the greater of these or something like that. So,
even love your neighbor, right? That doesn't mean go have a sexual affair with your neighbor.
Right.
Obviously, that's something else, right? But love your neighbor as if he or she were yourself is about, you know, that loving kindness.
But see, that also includes as yourself, and it also includes God. So that would not fit in a sexual context.
Right, exactly.
Right. And healthcare, then compassion again, is very, very important. Can you, even though we talked a little bit earlier about compassionate characteristics, can you talk a little bit about how you would see a compassionate nurse, for example?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's one of my favorite arenas, actually, is nursing, you know, medical professionals. Mm-hmm. And to whatever capacity, I think having compassion is highly important for them, partially because, and one of the keys for me about compassion is understanding that compassion is also a way to avoid burnout. So, you know, when people talk about compassion fatigue, they talk about how, oh gosh, I care so much that it burns me out. So I've redefined that as empathy fatigue, because ultimately it comes down to feeling so much for someone that you end up burning yourself out. So I think the characteristics of a nurse who's compassionate is a nurse who shows up, who is present, who acknowledges her patient's pain, but who sees her patient, and I'll say her just because I'm just going with the pronoun, but could be him, obviously, or anything, but just who sees a person as whole, not broken, not need to be fixed, not need to be helped, but somebody who is whole already, who they are coming in to serve. So I think it's this mentality of, I am here to serve, but this person is not broken. I am not here to fix them. I'm here to meet them where they are and help them, guide them, support them, serve them, but not necessarily try to fix them. So a compassionate person, a compassionate nurse may show up. And when somebody says, oh my gosh, you know, I'm like, they find out that they have cancer, it's not feeling so sad for them, which is more of a sympathetic reaction, or feeling so devastated for them in the sense that they're like feeling like going home and crying because they're like, oh, that poor person, you know, I can't believe they're going through this, or really relating back to their own family or personal situations. But really being compassionate is acknowledging that person's hardship that they might be experiencing and still seeing them as whole, having loving kindness for them in that situation. So acknowledgement is a huge part of compassion. Acknowledge, validating the person's feelings. So instead of saying, oh, you know, let me try to fix this for you, which is a pretty Americanized thing that we do. We love fixing things for people. It's about showing them validation. It's about acknowledging what they're experiencing. And it's about offering your guidance and support in a way that meets them where they are. So some people don't want your guidance and support. Some people just want to be held. Some people just want to be heard, you know, and so it's about understanding and finding out what that person's needs are and then meeting their needs.
I think,
so to me, that's what a compassionate nurse or healthcare professional is.
To me, why compassion is different than sympathy and burnout is that we have a whole, I have a whole different philosophy of life and death. And I believe in reincarnation. I believe that we're here to learn. And if we don't learn it the first time, we're given the opportunity the second and the third time to learn it. I also believe that we have a loving God. I don't believe in hell and all of this other than what we create for ourselves, because a loving God would not put us in such a difficult situation. I also do not believe that God causes hurricanes and all this stuff, that we create these ourselves. And so I also believe that before we are born, we decide what we're going to work on in that particular lifetime. And so we may decide that we're going to be a victim of violence and be murdered. And so that is fulfilling a contract that we have to learn something that we needed to make us a whole person, if that makes sense. And so we don't really need to feel burned out because we're so involved with the people, if that makes sense. Like I told you, I cry because I feel the emotions of the people. But I also see that this, what is happening, is something that all of the people involved have made a commitment for, to help in the lessons that they need to learn in this lifetime, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely, I love that philosophy. And I do, I actually talk a little bit about that in my book, about how we have soul contract. And, you know, I believe everybody has obviously their own belief, that by seeing people as whole and by seeing people as learning their lessons in this lifetime, you know, I think that that is a really helpful way to avoid burnout.
Right.
So instead of seeing somebody as broken who needs to be fixed, you see someone, like you just said, as, okay, this person has subconsciously chosen this path, and it may be painful and we may feel sad because they have to go through it, but it doesn't mean that they're broken. It means that they're learning something in this lifetime. And again, like you had said, whether you believe in reincarnation or not, Mm-hmm. We can still look at people as whole and see them as, okay, this is something that they are learning from. And even in my book, I talk about how if something keeps showing up in your life, there's a good chance it's because you haven't learned it yet. Because you haven't figured out how to learn it. And so if there's a pattern that you're experiencing, a great question to ask yourself is, what can I learn from this experience? Mm-hmm.
I had a problem when I was younger with the concept of change. Oh, I hated to change. I wanted everything the same. You know, even once I decorate my house, I don't move stuff around. I leave it where it is. And I had an antique shop once. And I was very particular about where I placed everything. But once I got it placed, I didn't move it until it sold. Whereas other people, and they did much better because they were always moving the merchandise around. And people would see things that they didn't see when it was in a different spot. So they were selling better than I did. But I had a thing about change. And it seemed like every year I was moving to a different house. Or I was moving to a different job. Or I was changing in some way. And finally, I thought, I've just got to learn to be flexible. I can't take all this change in my life. And then, you know, with me, usually a change happens and it's a few years down the road and all of a sudden I come to and I say, oh, that hasn't happened for years now, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I learned that change is a part of life and
absolutely,
you flow with it.
Yeah. And it's okay to feel sad, to feel emotions. I think part of the biggest challenge with change is that we try to suppress the feelings we have about change. You know, so we think, oh, the shoulds, right? I should feel more excited, or I should feel this, or I should feel this. And I think what we miss out on when we should ourselves is we miss out on how we actually are feeling. So, for example, when I was pregnant with my first child, mm-hmm. I remember feeling very sad and scared because I was thinking, oh my gosh, my life is about to change forever. But what was so beautiful about the recognition of how I felt was that it allowed me to actually move through my emotions rather than pretending I was fine, or rather than pretending that everything was great. You know, because ultimately for me at that time, even though, yes, part of me was excited about having the baby, part of me was afraid and was sad to say goodbye to my old life.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was a huge change. And by being more open to the feelings I was having when my daughter actually came, I was able to be present. Mm-hmm. Because I had allowed myself to feel all the feelings rather than avoiding them, which is what we tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to avoid the feelings, and then they just keep getting louder and louder and louder and keep showing up again and again and again because we're supposed to be learning something.
Then, Laura, how are grief and compassion connected?
So, yeah, that's a great question. So grief and compassion. So grief, as we define it at the Grief Recovery Institute, which is an organization that is amazing that I have spent the last several years as a trainer. But really, I just found that the work that's done at the Grief Recovery Institute is consistently profound for people. And so it's something I'm very proud to share and support. But the definition we use there is the conflicting feelings that come at the end of or change in a familiar pattern of behavior. So basically, the conflicting feelings, so not the bad, sad, horrible feelings, the mix of emotion that comes when things change. And so it's like very perfect that you asked me that question here because it's so relevant to this idea that you were talking about with change, which is grief is the product of the mixture of emotions that happen when things change in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And part of why I think that is so highly connected to compassion is that by understanding and normalizing the experience of grief, which comes in all shapes and sizes, it's not just about death, it's about all the different aspects of life that happen when things change, like having a baby, like any milestone, like moving things around in your store, right? Or moving down the street, or retiring or graduating or not making the team or whatever it is, those are all grieving experiences. And part of why compassion is so related is because compassion is about having that understanding that, oh, these are normal and natural feelings we have as human beings. And when we can relate more kindly to ourselves about the experiences we've had and the grief experiences that we are currently having, perhaps, mm-hmm. we can relate more kindly to other people, which is what compassion is all about. Mm-hmm. So understanding that you have a story, I have a story, everyone has a story to tell. All of our losses of our lives have made us who we are mm-hmm. and make us the interesting characters and creatures who we are. And that's what gives us compassion for other people is, oh man, like I didn't even realize all that I've been through in this lifetime. You know, you were mentioning at 85 years old, you know, at this point, you've lost so many of your people who you love, your family and friends. And by understanding that a little bit more, by understanding your story, I can have more compassion for you. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, wow, I can't imagine having gone through that. But it brings me this great connection to you, this great understanding of you as a human being. And therefore, I think understanding what loss is, what grief is, can mm-hmm. help us be more kind to each other.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about compassion and burnout, and mm-hmm. I think it's such an important concept that I wonder if you will revisit that and kind of summarize how to avoid burnout and why it happens, mm-hmm. because, as I say, it does happen a lot in the healthcare field, and it's so important.
Absolutely. So I think that one of the most important things is about understanding compassion is that we burn out when we don't have boundaries. Okay. And part of not having boundaries is when we feel so deeply for or with other people that we end up taking on their pain. And so I talk about how to avoid carrying the pain of the world. And one of the ways is that what you had just said, which is understanding that people are here to learn. Mm-hmm. And so when we can look at them not as people who are broken, but people who are actually whole, mm-hmm. we're learning lessons in this life. That's one way, because then you're not carrying the pain of the world when you look at the world and say, man, people are really learning a lot. You're not saying, oh man, these people are really suffering. And yes, people do suffer and it is painful and sometimes it's sad and hard and we can help in whatever ways we can. But sometimes this is part of their life journey. But coming back to some like more practical solutions, the first strategy that I like to talk about is just, again, acknowledging and validating. And as the listener, as the person who's there to be compassionate, this is much, much easier work than trying to come up with a solution. So acknowledging and validating is better for the listener because it's actually easier to listen with the mentality that you don't have to fix someone. Mm-hmm. You're just there to listen to them. You're there to hear them. You're there to validate what they're experiencing. So unless somebody says, please give me some advice, you're just better off acknowledging and validating what they're telling you, right? So you're like, wow, that I can't imagine what that's like for you. Gosh, that sounds really hard. And you're less likely to become involved in the drama or the issue, which will prevent over-involvement and codependency. So it's really just going back to this idea that we're just there to listen, to acknowledge and validate what they're experiencing rather than to come up with solutions for them. Because most of the time, the solutions we offer are things that tend to upset people. Like, no, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in the situation where you're offering advice and the person shoots you down like 7 times. And you're like, okay, this is clearly not working. Well, it's like, okay, well, then stop offering advice because they don't want your advice unless they ask for it. And sometimes even when they ask for it, they don't actually want it.
Yeah.
You know? And so the other thing, going back, you know, my second kind of strategy is begin shifting your mentality from pain and hardship. So going back to what we were just talking about, when we understand pain as part of growth rather than something evil, we can see someone on their growth journey in life. And then the third really big one is setting healthy boundaries. And there's so many great books out there. One of them is called Boundaries, When to Say Yes, When to Say No, and Take Control of Your Life. But I think it's really about setting healthy boundaries, knowing how to best interact with others and express what you need. So, you know, and sometimes people get upset when you set boundaries because, one, it can trigger something within them, or they feel like, hey, why aren't you doing this for me, but we have to also take care of ourselves, because then we actually don't burn out and we have more to give to others, right? So having a healthy boundary might mean saying, you know, I really can't today. Like, this isn't a good day for me.
Mm-hmm.
And can we reschedule, right? Or sometimes it means standing up for something that you really need, even if it makes somebody else uncomfortable or if they get upset, right? Because if we're energetically exhausted or physically exhausted, then we're not going to be much good to anybody else anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really believe in, you know, not engaging in negative conversations. So like gossipy, that can be really draining as
right,
well.
Right. You mentioned that sometimes people will ask for your advice, but they don't really want it. Recently,
yes,
someone on Facebook sent me a message, and she said, in your book, you said that you should not take such, I can't remember what it was, but it was an herb. You should not take it more than 6 weeks because it was harmful. She said, can you tell me why you said that and what you advise? So I spent a couple of hours looking so I could find the specific quote that I was referring to, and I found it under MD, WebMD, I think it is, which is a fairly reliable source. And so I copied it out and I sent it to her, and she wrote back and she said, well, I've been taking this for 2 years. I think she was worried about her own health. And then she's trying to find someone that's going to say, yeah, it's okay. And so I said, well, this is what they said. But I said, you know, other sources will have it different. Like much research, there's a lot of problems because sometimes, I said there's all kinds of problems because like sometimes people will take cell studies and extrapolate it to humans, which it isn't, you know, like people will say, well, this kills cancer. Well, they don't say it kills cancer cells. They're trying to imply that it kills cancer in humans. But those human studies haven't been done yet. It's only cell studies. So I said, you know, a lot of times people get mixed up. And I said, you know, different people will come up with different things. So then she writes me and she said, well, Dr. So-and-so that wrote the book on whatever it was said that this isn't true. I said, well, you know, I said, the doctor on web said that it causes harm to the GI tract. But I said, you know, you have to just read the research and decide for yourself. You know, I can't tell you one way or another. I learned a long time ago. I remember I finished my doctorate and I had lived in New York City and I wanted to go back to New York City. But I knew that the job offer that I had from Duke was much better than anything I was offered in New York. So I said to my mother, well, don't you think that I should move back to New York? Because I said, you know, my brothers and sisters like to come visit, and you like to come visit. I'd be there. And she said, you have to decide what's best for you. I can't, you know, make that decision for you. And I always remember that because I was I was desperately trying to get her to say, oh, yeah, you should go back to New York. But then, you know, when someone else makes that decision, then if it doesn't go well, then you've got someone to blame too, right?
Right, so. Exactly. And the other thing about that, which I love, is that she's giving you the power to, you know, some people will tell you what to do and then they'll be mad at you when you don't do it. Whereas your mom gave you the opportunity to make your own decision without the insistence that it satisfy her.
Right.
You know, and, you know, whether she wanted you to be in New York or not, she didn't let that get involved in her decision because she said, you know, you're the one who has to live with this choice.
Right.
Like, I might visit you, but ultimately you are the one. And, you know, the person who wrote you and then said, well, this doctor said this and this blah, blah, blah said this. They probably, and part of one of the things that I love to do here is get curious like you did, which is she probably was looking for a certain answer and then she was upset that you didn't give it to her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're like, well, you're saying, well, you have to make a decision for yourself. And then she's like, oh, crap. You know, like, I don't want to have to make this decision on my own, right? Because that can be really, it can be hard because then who's the responsibility on? It's on her instead of on you. And so you gave her what you could And then one of the things I like to say is, now it's her turn, and it's not about you.
Right.
It's about her, because mm-hmm. she's the one who has to wake up and go to bed with that decision mm-hmm. every day at the end of the
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm. Well, she really was looking for someone to say, yes, it's okay that you took this
yeah.
2 years when it probably was dangerous. But she was looking for someone to say, yeah, it's okay. And that doctor, you know, said to her, yeah, it's okay. It won't hurt you. It's safe.
Yeah. And so she was looking for validation.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you could validate is, well, you're still here. Like, the only thing you could have said that was validating without, you know, giving her that advice was, you're still here. It's been 2 years. So mm-hmm. clearly you're okay, but you may want to do some research and see if it's a good idea for you to continue doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and that's ultimately then it's taking it back to her again, which is just giving her the choice to make her own decision.
Right. See, I also believe in life that there are many things that are harmful, but we can't usually resolve every one. And so
no.
if we resolve the majority of things in our life that are harmful, then we probably can maintain balance and not end up ill. It's like, I know that the microwave is not good for you, but I'm not about at this point in my life to give up the microwave. The second mm-hmm. thing that I know as far as cancer prevention is the BPA in the bottled water, especially in the summer when it's hot, melts into the water and it's a carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
But I still drink bottled water. I get the number one plastic bottle, which is the best because it's the hardest of the plastic. But I have not found a filter that I like, and I haven't reached the point where I am about to make that change. So even though I know that those two things are carcinogen, I haven't made those changes yet. You know, but I feel like that my life is balanced pretty much because I eat right, I pray every day, I meditate, I try to practice the spiritual concepts, I exercise every day, I do all the things that I know influence cancer,
mm-hmm.
and there's a couple of them I don't do. And so I feel like as long as I have mastered the majority, I probably will maintain my balance as far as cancer.
Yeah. And you have to be at peace with your own decision, because the other thing that can probably cause cancer, which you obviously know way more about than I do, is when you create tremendous stress in your life. And so
mm-hmm.
having all that worry, you know, of, oh my gosh, am I doing enough? Am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? That can actually be as harmful as the things themselves. You know,
mm-hmm.
with pregnancy, a lot of times doctors will say, if you are so stressed about not having a glass of wine, then you might as well just have a glass of wine.
Right.
Like, the glass of wine is hurting you less than the anxiety and stress around not drinking
mm-hmm.
it, if that's you, right? And so it kind of goes the same thing, like in a similar way, you worrying about the microwave or you worrying about those carcinogens in the BPA, non-BPA-free bottles would be worse
mm-hmm.
than you worrying, like it would be worse for you to just consistently worry about those or obsess over those than it is for you to just say, well, I'm doing the majority of what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I may choose to add to that list, and
right.
I may not, and I'm okay with it. And so
mm-hmm.
having that peace with what you've chosen
mm-hmm.
and having that compassion for yourself. So, okay, well, these are the things that I've chosen and that I'm willing to live with. And at some point, I may change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I may not,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I'll act accordingly. And so I think that is kind of a proponent of self-compassion as well.
Now, Laura, are there other things you would like to say before we look at your book and your products and things like that?
I feel like this has been a very rich conversation, and I hope that the people who are listening are able to gain whatever it is that they need. I trust that they are.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really happy with what we've talked about today. And so if there's something else, if there are any other questions that you have, or if listeners want to write me and
mm-hmm.
have questions, they're welcome to do that. But otherwise, I feel very happy with the content that we've shared today.
Great. Then, Laura, would you tell us about your book and services and products that you have and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. So, I mean, I've talked about the book quite a bit already on the call, but basically
mm-hmm.
they can just go to Amazon now and they can get, I have the Kindle, the print and the audiobook version of the Compassion Code, How to Say the Right Thing When the Wrong Thing Happens. And that is, to me, that's an amazing place to get started. So if the listeners or anybody who's on this call is looking to improve their compassion, grow their compassion muscle, avoid burnout, understand compassion more, this is a great practical guide to doing that. So that awakening, that kind-heartedness that's in all of us. Because we do have it. We all have it, I believe. And so it's just about awakening it even more. And then avoiding burnout, ideally. And then as far as my products and all that stuff, they can just visit my website, laurajack.com. So L-A-U-R-A, Laura, J-A-C-K, Jack.com. And I have tons of free resources on there. There's actually a resource section where they can go, and I have a free little mini course called 7 Days Thriving. And that's really about loss, about how to thrive after loss. I have a program called the ABCs of Surviving. The Thriving, again, is about rediscovering your light after loss. So welcome to look through that. I have great book recommendations on there and a lot of free stuff. I have these new Ask for Anything calls that I've been doing this year where if they join my list, they can have access to my Ask for Anything free calls, which I do once every other week. So they're welcome. They'll find that on my website. If they go to my website, they'll be able to see that. But those are just ways for people to call in and say, hey, this is going on in my life. These are challenges I'm facing. What should I do? What should I say? How do I interact or act in this situation in a loving, compassionate way? So if they want to join that, they're welcome to visit my website as well. So those are just the two easiest ways. Go to Amazon and find the Compassion Code, or go to laurajack.com and do some perusing. You can read about all the different things that I offer.
Well, thank you very much, Laura. I appreciate this, and I know it will be helpful to the listeners. And I wish you much continued success, and I wish you a very healthy little boy now.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I was telling Dr. Carl that I do here in November. So coming up pretty soon, there will be another little human, hopefully with lots of love and compassion sharing in the world. We'll see.
I don't know what sun sign November is, but I have a good friend that his birthday is in November, and we've always gotten along very good. So do you know?
I think that he'll be a Scorpio.
Oh, he will. Oh.
No, I have a Scorpio daughter as well. So.
Oh, do you? Oh.
I think there's something for me to learn here.
It sounds like it may be right. And what are you?
I'm a Taurus.
Oh, Taurus are so easy to get along with. I have my sister and my brother-in-law are both Taurus, and they're...
Yeah, we're slow to anger, but then watch out, world.
Well, I haven't seen that side of them, and I mean, I anticipate not seeing it at this late stage in life. So I think we met your deadline. I thank you again,
yes,
Laura.
Sir. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here.
I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year, and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O. Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O. Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O. Helvey, your host.